Good afternoon and welcome on in to Kildare Focus. It is Tuesday the 13th of December 2022, heading up towards Christmas now. You're listening to KFM. My name is Caoimhe Hearney and I'll be with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Sergeant Jim Kelly. He's from Naas Garda Station and he's also the Crime Prevention Officer here in County Kildare. He's warning people to be vigilant. A number of people have been calling to houses in impersonating Gardaí. So Sergeant Kelly will be telling us all about that. We'll be speaking to Grainne Griffin. She is the Director of Communications at the CCPC. Research on social media influencers is highlighting the need for improvements in labelling in influencers' ads. So many influencers there not saying when they are actually advertising certain products, which is not good news for us consumers. Then we'll be speaking to Damien Pilo. He's the CEO of TROR. They're the National Federation of Services for Unmarried Parents and Their Children. He'll be telling us how, in the best interests of children this Christmas, parents sharing access and custody should make sure their Christmas arrangements are agreed upon well in advance of Christmas. And then, last but not least, we'll be speaking to Aisling Fitzgibbon. She'll be telling us about elimination communication. What is it? Well, I only just found out myself the last few days. It's the no-nappy approach. Believers in elimination communication say that babies can be potty trained from the time they are just a few months old. So we'll be finding out how that works. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, 0833 97 97 97. You can call us 045 898 999, or you can send in an email, studio@kfmradio.com.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, like I just said there is warnings out to be vigilant, as a number of people have been calling around houses here in the county and impersonating Gardaí. And joining me now on the line is Crime Prevention Officer in Kildare, Sergeant Jim Kelly from Naas Garda Station. Good afternoon, Sergeant Kelly.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Thank you for taking me on your show today. As you've outlined, this is an incident that has occurred in the Kildare and surrounding counties over the last number of weeks and on a number of occasions throughout the year. I just want to highlight to your listeners the do's and don'ts and maybe outline one of the incidents which they may be able to assist and Garda Síochána in solving.
Okay, so firstly then, Sergeant Kelly, you can tell us what people have been doing and how this has been going about.
Yeah, to give an example of a Caoimhe, perhaps I'll bring you to last Tuesday, this day last week, between 8:30 and 9 a.m. in the Salinswood area of Salins in Naas. A gentleman answered his door to a caller who identified himself as a plainclothes detective from Garda Síochána. This person was well dressed with a shirt and tie on. He appeared in dark clothing and he had a black baseball cap. And he produced what this man described as an identification card. He's not better described than there was no vehicle outside the house at the time. This gentleman who answered the door took this person on face value and allowed him into his home. When in the home, this person outlined that he was investigating burglaries locally where money was stolen, and he asked the injured party, in this case, to check his own money. And on doing so, he asked the injured party, could he check the money, and he asked him to asked his permission to take it away for examination. On doing this, he left the scene with this person's money and walked away from the scene. And as I said, no transport locally was visible, but he may have had a car in the vicinity.
Okay.
Now, while it sounds
I was just going to say there, I mean, really then, these culprits are hiding in plain sight.
In plain sight, yeah. This man called 8:30 in the morning. It was bright. And he walked to this man's door in plain sight, approached the door and spoke to him and interacted with him for a number of minutes. So he was there, he's visible to members of the public, he's visible in the area. And he interacted for a number of minutes with this injured party.
Okay.
This injured party was very shaken, obviously, after the incident. Thankfully, there was no injuries incurred. But the use of the language of a member from Garda Síochána gave this man the belief that this person could enter his house safely and securely, which wasn't the case. And although not injured, he was very shaken after the incident, and some of his money, his well-earned money, was taken from him without his permission.
Okay. So anyone with information there can obviously call Naas Garda Station 0458 884 300. That's 0458 884 300. In terms of then how prevalent this is, and then what people should be doing, like, if, how do you know, like, this man produced a badge. So how do you know about like a real badge from a fake badge? Like, what do people do?
Well, a few tips in relation to it, Cuiva, and I, before I even go into it, I believe this man may have called to other premises, and persons may have not been victim of a crime, but they may have encountered him,
okay,
or they may have observed him in the area. And anybody who has been approached in a similar manner over the last number of weeks, days, who may have not lost any property, but may have encountered, I'd ask them to come forward as well. But as regards the Garda identification card, all Garda identifications will have a photograph of the member on the card, and the insignia of an Garda Síochána embossed on their identification and a number. But in relation to callers to houses, and anybody calling to a house who's calling unannounced or uninvited to a person who lives alone, vulnerable, an elderly person, or indeed any person in their own home, a few tips that I would recommend to anybody going forward and that can be used in all circumstances. First of all, if somebody comes to your home unannounced or uninvited and calls to your front door, before you even consider answering that door or going to the front, I'd ensure all your entry points to your home, whether it be the back or the side, are locked and secured. So you can go to the front door, and the only point that can be accessed to your home is that front door, which you're now in control of and you're standing beside.
Hmm.
I'd recommend door chains or limiters, which you pull, you know, you open your door to a small few inches and you identify who's at the door. It's your property. You're in charge of your property and nobody can come into your property without your permission. So in this case, if it's somebody pretending to be a member of an Garda Síochána, you can demand their identification card and everybody will have a card with them. And in the case of anybody else calling to a house unannounced, they should have identification with them. If you don't know who they are calling to your house, they should let you know who they are. And you should demand that from them. If they're reluctant to give that to you, you should close the door and tell them they're not to be present at your home. If you don't have a limiter or a chain on your door, interact out your window. Don't open your door. Don't give somebody an entry point into your house straight away. Genuine callers will have identification. Genuine Gardaí will have Garda badges with them and in their presence. Ask them the reason for their present at your house, Cuiva. If somebody calls to your door, they obviously have a reason for calling, and you're entitled to know what that reason is.
Okay.
And like in this case, no guard is going to ask you to produce your wallet, to produce cash, to produce money for cross-reference. That's just not going to happen, Cuiva. And anybody that approached you and is approached and asked to produce their wallet for cross-reference, do not hand it over. It's not something that happens with members of Garda Síochána. We don't take cash from people's houses. We don't take people's wallets for examination. So if somebody requests that at your door, please do not hand over any cash or any valuables to them at your door.
Okay. And then in terms, Sergeant Kelly, of, you know, people who do, maybe like they ask for the badge and, you know, let's say we all know that there are very good, you know, fake IDs out there maybe. Yeah. So let's say the person looks at the badge, they think it's the real deal. Maybe should they call, you know, if they called into Naas Garda Station and said, yeah, look, there's a guard at my door, can you verify that this is a real guard? Like, would that be something that people could do?
Yes, Cuiva. I'd ask people to do that. If they're still in doubt about the person at the door, first of all, I would ask the guard or person pretending to be guard their name, their number. Everybody should have a registration number.
Okay.
And that's independent to themselves. Ask them what station they're from and then ask them to wait while you ring the local Garda station and verify that Jim Kelly is on duty today and he's calling to your home. No Garda station will be more than happy to take that call and they will verify. If the station can't verify that person at the door, he's not a member of Garda Síochána. They will know who's working in the vicinity. So if it's in Selbridge, if it's in Leixlip, if it's in Naas, whatever town you're in, if this happens to you, ring your local Garda station. They will tell you, or ring Naas Garda Station, and they can confirm who is or isn't on duty in the area. And that, again, will reassure you. But if you're still worried, Cuiva, call a neighbour, call a relative, and tell that person at the door you're not happy with them, that you're calling somebody to come down and verify their identification. If they're genuine, they have no issue waiting around.
Okay,
if they're not genuine, they will not wait around, you know.
You believe, Sergeant Kelly, that there are possibly up on hundreds of people maybe that have been affected by this but haven't come forward because they were in doubt, or maybe they're embarrassed and you're appealing to them today to come forward?
Yeah, I wouldn't say hundreds, Cleve. I'd say there is some people. I'd hope it's not hundreds, but I really encouraging anybody that, as you said, is doesn't feel right about reporting or hasn't reported or feels a bit, you know, this happened to me, I feel stupid, I handed over my cash. You're not stupid. These people are out to defraud you. Mm. They're doing it every day of the week. And I guess Sinéad Connor would appreciate if anybody could call if they were a victim or if they witnessed somebody. And particularly people that live near older, vulnerable, elderly people, if they see somebody calling to the house that they don't recognise and they haven't seen before and appear to be interacting with the person at the door, and that person, don't be afraid to walk across and ask them, are they okay? Do they feel comfortable with that person at the door? Or do they need some help? And if those people, you know, if anybody can get a description, if they see a car, we'd ask them to take a reg number, a good description of the person that they have seen at a neighbour's or relative's door, and pass it on to the Gardaí. And we will do our best to try and find and track down these people. As I say, it's happening in Kildare, it's happening in our county surrounding Kildare, unfortunately, Laois, Offaly, Mead. Mm. So it's an issue that's arising in a quite wide-ranging area of Leinster. And we'd like to make everybody aware that it's occurring, and treat every person that comes to your door, unless they're known to you or invited to your home, you're in charge of your own home, and don't let them into your home or in charge of your property unless you're 200% sure of who they are and their entitlement to be there.
Okay, great advice there. If you want to just recap, Sergeant Kelly, on the Salinswood incident, and hopefully maybe someone might know something again.
Yes, Cleve, it's this day last week, the 6th of December, between 8:30 and 9 a.m. in the Salinswood area of Naas. A male wearing a black baseball cap, shirt and tie, black clothing, and he called to this man's home. He appeared to be on foot, so he may have walked a short distance from there and entered a vehicle and left the area. I'd ask anybody who saw anybody suspicious or may have had somebody call to their door last Tuesday morning in the same time in the same area to please come forward and assist us with our investigation.
Okay, that's great. And then just in relation to, you know, we're coming up to the Christmas there now. Of course, a lot of people go away at Christmas. You might be over, you know, in your family's homes. It's a time where there sometimes is everyone at the house or no one. What kind of advice would you give to people when they're leaving this Christmas?
When they're leaving your home, Cleve, the first thing I'd say, if you have an alarm, make sure it's on. Hmm. If you have lights, timer switches are very helpful to make it look like there's people in your home. If you have one or two vehicles and a vehicle can be left at your house, certainly leave it in the driveway of your house. A key holder or a nearby person who is available to come to your home should the alarm go off is very helpful. And also a person to check on your property on a regular basis is helpful. Of course, if you want to ring the Garda station and inform them that your home, whatever your address is going to be empty over a period of time, that again can be recorded in the Garda station. And while people are on patrol, they can just do a drive-by of your house to make sure everything is in place. But just alarms on, timer switches if possible, and a near neighbour who can check on your property as regularly as possible over the Christmas period.
Okay, great advice there from Sergeant Jim Kelly. Of course, he's also warning people to be vigilant. People are doing their rounds around Kildare, calling to people's houses and impersonating Gardaí. So Sergeant Kelly there telling us all about what to do, and make sure to double check, triple check, and be 200% sure that the guard is in fact a guard. Ask for the name, ask for his Garda registration number, ask what station he is working in, and then you can call your local station and verify that, in fact, that person is a guard before you do anything or let them into your home. Sergeant Jim Kelly there from Naas Garda Station, Crime Prevention Officer here in County Kildare. Thank you very much, Sergeant Kelly.
Kildare Focus with Caoimh O'Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, I'm going to check in with Pat Costello, who is out and about today in the big yellow bus. We are trying to name that. Ben Atkinson put it out to a few of our listeners there this morning on names that we could actually call it. But at the moment, we call it the big yellow bus. Are you there, Pat?
Yeah, I've called it a few names and times as well. anyway, Caoimhe, Fáilte go léim an bhradán. Yes, it's we're here in the historic town of Leixlip, stretching all the way back to Vikings time when it was known at that stage as Laxlop. If parting my Scandinavian, it means the leap of the salmon. I'm not sure there'll be any salmon leaping around today because we have a temperature of 3 degrees and it feels like minus one. But Leixlip is situated between the Royal Canal, the Rye River and the Liffey, so very much on the banks of the rivers and of the canal. We have been out around the Cowlandstown area where we spoke to John. We've left there past the, I suppose, the bigger housing estates of Louisa Bridge, Rockingham and Ryvale Lawns. Then we took a trip down Green Lane, Caoimhe. The three schools that are there, the Scoil Mhuireadh, Scoil Mhuireadh and Scoil Ón Foill. Some of the kids are, or some of the pupils I should say, they're leaving to go home, the earlier ones. The others have to stay a little bit after 3 or 4 o'clock. But it's busy around there at the moment on the Green Lane, those three Green Lane schools. Then we headed past the original Leixlip GA club and all the way then towards the more established estates of Castletown and Oaklawn, then the newer ones like Easton and Glen Easton and River Wade, and then the newer ones of them all, the Beach Park, Westfield and Harper Lane, the very newest estate in Leixlip, on this side of it anyway, the west side. And we're here now at Glen Easton Shopping Centre. Busy, busy shopping centre, lots of people going in for their coffee. So I think, Caoimhe, I think it's time to maybe get a little cappuccino, or as Dubs might say, an Al Pacino.
A lovely little cappuccino. Are you drinking coffee yourself over there? It's well for some. Me stuck over here and you out and about driving around drinking coffee.
I am working, so therefore I cannot touch drink at all.
You can't have an Irish coffee, but you can have a coffee.
That's it.
All right, Pat, okay, we'll chat back with you again, and hopefully everyone in Leixlip is getting their Christmas shopping done. Now, I am changing tack a little bit and we are moving towards the... we'll be talking to Gráinne Griffin. She's on the line now, waiting patiently for us. She is Director of Communications at the CCPC. Research recently on social media influencers highlights the need for improvements in labelling in influencers' ads. And Gráinne is going to tell us all about this. Good afternoon, Gráinne.
Good afternoon, and that's right, we've been out doing some research to look at influencers on social media. Now, it's not an area where we get a lot of complaints, but it is something that we know is really big, and that you have like 3.95, so almost 4 million social media users in Ireland, and a huge proportion of them do follow influencers. So we just wanted to have a look and see, look, are their posts being tagged correctly? Do people know when they're seeing ads and when they're not? And what we found is, look, there's a lot of work to be done, and we're looking forward to getting stuck into that in 2023.
Okay, yeah, because it's something, when I saw this and I read through with Gráinne, it's something that struck me, because I often notice when I'm on Instagram, you know, I'm thinking, oh yeah, this girl has this lovely face cream and blah, 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 I think I might buy it. And then after a few times watching the video, or you continue on, you suddenly then see at the very, very, very bottom, maybe in white writing, which is already on a white background, and it says hashtag ad. And you're kind of thinking, like, it's kind of a grey area there, like, because it's not very obvious that they're actually being paid to promote the product.
Yeah, and that's a classic example of something that's just really poorly labelled. So when we went out and we looked at a lot of different posts. We examined over 70 influencers. And what we found is that, look, in half the cases of commercial content, there was simply no tag at all. And then in the next cohort, then what you see is really poor tagging. So exactly what you're talking about there, either where the tag is maybe in a colour font where it nearly blends into the picture behind it, or it's not up consistently throughout the video, or like you just don't necessarily see it. And ultimately, like as social media users, you're scrolling through your phone, you're seeing dozens of posts every minute. And really what you're looking for from an influencer is that it is tagged so clearly, just so strongly and so obviously that you can't miss it as you just fly past that post on your phone. It stands out straight away. And so we're planning on bringing in guidance. We're going to work with the ASAI next year on it to just set out really clearly for influencers themselves, for consumers, for the platforms, for the brands, for everybody, just what exactly is expected in this space so that consumers are really well protected online.
Mm-hmm. And because you said, 50% of influencers ad content not tagged as advertising. But is there, like, I think a few years ago now, I'm not sure exactly of the year, that this did, you know, come in, that it is law, they have to show that they're advertising. So is there any repercussions if they don't?
This has been around and there are repercussions. And what we've seen is it's particular issues where maybe there's been a lack of clarity that are popping up. So, for example, own brand products really stood out as something where there wasn't tagging happening. So that would be a case where maybe you have an influencer who has their own brand line, which may or may not now have their name in it. So you, if you follow them regularly, you're up to date with what they're doing, you may be well aware that that's their own brand products and that they're likely to make a profit from you making a purchase. But if you don't, or if you're seeing a post that's just been shared by one of your friends or one of your family, you may not realize there's any connection between the influencer and that particular product. So that's something where we're looking to bring clarity to as well. But in the meantime, the ASAI, they do take complaints and they do consider complaints in relation to social media advertisers. And the CCPC can also come in areas where there is very high consumer detriment and take enforcement action. And actually, one of the areas where we've been doing a lot of work over the past year is in relation to TikTok. And they have brought in a number of changes actually as a result of their engagement with ourselves and our European partners so that consumers can report unbranded content if they see it, or branded content rather that isn't tagged if they see it on their social media feeds.
Okay, yeah, and I see that just 10% of Irish consumers trust the information provided by influencers, which I find surprising because I think sometimes when you follow people on social media accounts, it's almost like you know them, and especially if you're a fan, you kind of think you nearly almost trust them. So I would have thought that that would have been higher. But it says here as well, Grainne, that consumers overestimate their ability to recognise influencer ads. So obviously a lot of us being hoodwinked.
Yeah, it's exactly like you said there. What we know is that if we say to people, do you trust influencers online? Most of them, the vast majority of them are going to say no. Only 10% of them will say yes. But if you actually dig into it, and we did because we did large-scale market research, but we also did focus groups, and we asked, but what about this person, for example, that you follow, or what about this person? And what people tend to say then is, oh, well, I wouldn't really consider that person an influencer. They're more maybe an interactive celebrity, or, you know, they're somebody of interest to me. They feel like they know them, and then they feel like they trust them. So it's more people don't trust the broader category of influencer, but when you actually engage with them on their own social media behaviour, people do tend to trust the people that they follow.
Okay, there you go. So the advice there, I suppose, Grainne, from the CCPC is that obviously if you're in doubt, you can always report any issues you might have and just be aware. Keep your eyes peeled, I suppose, for any of those small little hashtag ad or, you know, if it is someone's own brand line or whatever, because like you said, you just don't know. And obviously these people are being paid to promote maybe their own product and of course other products as well.
Absolutely.
Yep, Grainne Griffin there, Director of Communications at the CCPC, and they just conducted new research which found social media influencers and highlighting the need for improvements in labelling influencers ads. Many of the influencers that they did do the research on were not properly tagging their posts as advertising, or if they were tagging, the tagging wasn't very clear. Thank you very much, Grainne. Always great to us here in KFM. Now I will be speaking to Damien Pilo in just one moment, and he'll be telling us, in the best interests of your children, parents sharing access and custody should make their Christmas arrangements agreed upon in advance to avoid any confusion. And Damien is the CEO of Troar. Good afternoon, Damien.
Good afternoon, Cuiva.
Damien, I suppose it seems obvious, but obviously when, you know, parents are potentially separated or divorced or whatever, there's always contention there.
Absolutely. Now, for the vast majority of families and in cases, people get this sorted out. But we have a national information service, and every year we get a number of calls from parents who find that they haven't planned this in advance, or they had expectations, or they expected that the children were going to be with them on Christmas Day, and found out that wasn't the case. It wasn't part of their arrangement, or wasn't seen by the other parents as to be part of the arrangement. And so, because Christmas really falls again this year on the weekend, again, a parent who isn't normally resident with the child, who may get the child every weekend or every second weekend, may think that this Christmas landing on their weekend is guaranteed that they're going to have the child, and the other parent may not have that same view. And the child may not have that same view. And so it's really important that parents work this out, talk to children as early as they can, and explain to them what's going to happen, because Christmas is a family time and a very emotive time, and people have all sorts of expectations about what they want to see happening around Christmas. So we encourage families to get this resolved early, and particularly where there is conflict in the family, particularly where parents find it hard to communicate with each other, to maybe use the services of an intermediary to have a conversation about where the child is going to stay, and put the child at the centre of that and try and hear what the child's needs are in that case. And what we found is that most children want to see their parents over the Christmas period. Mm. They want to engage with them. They love to celebrate that opening the gifts with parents. And some parents can arrange that. They can arrange it, you know, either in person or by video call. Or they make arrangements that the children will see the other parent on the day or shortly afterwards, so in the days beyond Christmas. And so, you know, people can reach compromises if they just really think about it from a child's point of view and what's in the best interest of their children.
Okay, TROR, of course, the National Federation of Services for Unmarried Parents and Their Children. Damien, you know, like you said, it obviously is a difficult time. If it is a situation where, let's say, just as an example, maybe the dad usually gets the children on the weekends, and now, like you said, Christmas is falling on a Sunday this year. Like, how does that work? Like, does the dad automatically have the right to have the child on Christmas Day? Or, you know, is it something that just needs to be discussed? Like, what way does it work?
Well, that's a very good question, Grieve. And again, it's how you ask that in terms of the right. Does the dad have a right? And when we try and now rethink of since the children's referendum, thinking from a child's point of view, what's the child's rights in this? Mm. The child's rights is not to be pulled and pushed around in terms of where they feel, you know, making choices about their parents, and for parents to talk to them about what's in their interest and where do they want to be spending Christmas Day. And you'll find that they have maybe, you know, very open to the possibility of spending it in either family home, because they tend to have two homes if they've been going regularly to both parents. And it mightn't be a big issue, or it may be, but what we usually find is that if parents are thinking about this and they've been through this process before, they usually then try to come to an arrangement very quickly about Christmas as part of their custody arrangements, and they don't just leave it a chance of what day Christmas falls on. So they usually come to an arrangement that maybe Christmas Day the child will stay with one parent 1 year, and maybe the other parent the other year, or always with one parent on Christmas Day, but Dean's is there the day after with the other parent, if that's possible to travel and all those things. So you know, it really, you know, it doesn't mean that just because you've had it every year. Christmas is a unique time. It's a holiday period, and it continues into that holiday space. So parents usually have some arrangement at holiday times and where the children will spend it. It can happen at Easter, it can happen at midterms. But Christmas is a particularly emotive one, because parents have, you know, the joy of Santa Claus coming and the presents and opening of the gifts and spending time with the family. But it's equally important for both parents and their extended families that they get to spend time with their nieces, nephews, grandchildren as well, you know. So it's important that, and children love that, and they get double the bonus of Christmas, you know, when they can go to other homes and their other home and their other side of their family. So really to encourage parents to really be child-centred and really be, you know, and we all think we are. But it's really when you think about that, and you take the conflict out of the child's life, out of the decision making for the child, and you really try and help them, you know, to find where they want to spend Christmas, and they're not feeling, well, I have to spend it with X because X will feel sad if I don't, or, you know, or I want to spend it, but where they feel most comfortable on that day and that time. And it's not easy, and it's difficult to do, and that's why organisations can offer support like TROR and others, you know, in terms of mediation services and supports. Now, you won't, you know, or a third party, if you can't do it yourselves at this stage, you won't get a mediator before Christmas, unlikely to. So maybe a third party, a friend of the mutual friend or a friend can make that arrangement if the communication is poor between parents. Try and see, you know, what are the expectations? What's the child's expectation? Because the children will know, I usually go to maybe daddy next weekend and it's Christmas. Am I going to daddy or what's happening? And they may be waiting for that conversation. So it's an important one to have. It's an important one to talk about. And the earlier you do it, the more chance you can resolve it and enjoy then whatever the outcome is that you both have. But if somebody insists, well, this is my weekend, I'm doing it, regardless of how the child feels, that's not really in the best interest of the kids. So we really encourage people to talk it out and try and use respectful language, try and communicate in a respectful way, and what would be in the best interest. And most parents want that. And most parents are able to to get over their own interpersonal relationships when they can really be child-centred.
Okay, so the message there, keep the child at the centre of everything you do and all the decisions you make over the Christmas. Like you said there, Damien, you're probably not going to get someone from Truro as a mediator over the Christmas now or before the Christmas. But if people do want to get in touch, www.truro.ie, open Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So if you want to call in, of course, it is 01 67 00 120. That is Damien Pilo, CEO of Truro, the National Federation of Services for Unmarried Parents and Their Children, keeping the best interests of children at the heart of everything you do this Christmas. Thank you very much, Damien.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, I just have to check in with Pat, who is out and about over in Leixlip. Pat, how are you getting on over there?
Getting on very well indeed. Yeah, we've moved from the west side to the east side of Leixlip. Now, we've up in the Confey area, up Captain's Hill, where we pass the likes of Riverdale and St. Mary's Park, of course, Skull San Carlo, and the Church of Charles Borromeo, St. Charles Borromeo. He's links with back with Italy, as you might expect, with a name like that. Then we pass by Avondale and into Glendale and Glendale Meadows, huge estates, before we ended up in River Forest and the River Forest Shopping Centre, all the way down as far as Confey College. Plenty of great players and sports people, indeed singers as well. There's a singer, a UK singer, who attended Confey College. Her name escapes my mind. Maybe you can fill it in for me, Caoimhe. But sports people we can think of would be Trevor Brennan. Played for Barnhall, played for St. Mary's, played for Leinster, played for Ireland, and then played for Toulouse as well. I wonder if he still got the bar over there in Toulouse. He played football for Confey as well. And we are here now in, of course, Nathan Collins, the Irish international player. He went to Confey College as well. Confey College, well, we're getting a feedback, that's why I'm stopping now and again.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
But we're here now at the very, very popular River Forest Shopping Centre. It's very, very busy, as indeed is the Leixlip Library across the way. So you did say people are out shopping. They are definitely out shopping. It is a busy time. Schools are finishing for today, but people are out shopping. And I'm looking forward to come back down towards Main Street, because the lights are up. And I'd say once it gets a little bit dark, they will look spectacular.
Beautiful, Pat. Well, we'll of course be checking back in with you over the course of the rest of the day. And I have to say, you're a fountain of knowledge about all things in Leixlip. I didn't know half of the stuff that you were telling me about there, but I did have a lovely Italian meal in Leixlip there only recently, and I have to say it was beautiful, a lovely town. So stay tuned. Pat will be back on in a few minutes' time. Over the course of the next couple of hours, Pat will be back on air. And now we're changing tack to completely to Aisling Fitzgibbon, who's going to tell us about the no-nappy approach. Believers in the elimination communication say babies can be potty trained when they are just a few months old. Hard to believe, but Aisling is here to tell us about how it works. Good afternoon, Aisling.
Hi, Caoimhe. Thanks for having me on the show.
And Aisling, I need to say as well that you are a nutritionist, but I don't think it's linked to this. This, am I right?
Yeah, no, not one bit. I actually heard about this from a lady that I had a chat with. She's in America, and she was telling me that her son was out of, well, they call it diapers there, but nappies, by 14 months. And I said, oh my gosh, how is that possible? And she said, oh, I did elimination communication. So I didn't think anything more about it. And then when I got pregnant last year, I just started looking into it, and I thought, oh, this sounds really interesting. So I got myself ready. I got all the equipment, the little potty and a little pad for the bed, you know, that's waterproof. And then we just started trying it from birth. And yeah, so it's really interesting how basically, like, elimination communication, it's a gentle, non-coercive way to respond to a baby's natural hygiene needs from as early as birth. So like all mammals, human babies have an instinct to not soil themselves and their sleep space and their caregiver. So they actually clearly communicate this from birth. So what it is really, it's about just learning those cues. And it's like the way a baby gives a cue for when it's hungry or when it's tired. You just start to tune in and start to decipher what they are, and it takes time. Obviously, it's a practice, so it's not about doing it like all the time. So, like, I use cloth nappies as a backup. You know, I use them. He's wearing them, but we use way less. And 9 times out of 10, he is never pooing in the nappy. He's pooing in the potty, which is amazing because it's like makes everything so much easier.
So your son is seven months old. Is that right?
Yeah, he's 7 months now, Rean, yeah.
7 months, Rean, and you're saying he wears a cloth nappy, but essentially he's like 70% toilet trained, potty trained.
Yeah, he's using the potty, so we call them potty tunities in the EC world, elimination communication world. So basically, like, when he wakes up, I take off the nappy in the morning, and that's like a key time, and he's kind of wriggling about. You can tell that he's uncomfortable, and he'll do his pees, and he'll do he'll do his poo straight away. And then, like, key times in the day, so, like, say if we're going out, we might offer it before we go out, when we come back in. You know, there's, like, different transition times. And then he gives clear signs sometimes that he's about to do a poo, and I'm sure parents listening will know that kind of face that they make, the pushing down sensation, the grunting. And the minute I see that, it's like I take off the nappy and put him onto the potty, and, like, yeah, it's always happening that he's forgetting the poops in the potty, so it's great. Like, it's so much easier in terms of not nappies and clothes and all that. So yeah, and it takes a while. I think a lot of people said to me, oh, it seems like a lot of hard work. It is, I suppose, in terms of upfront, you have to do more, and it's like more of an effort than just putting on a nappy. But then in time, when you do this practice, the babies are out of nappies by 9 months to, you know, latest will be 18 months. They'll be completely independent, like using the potty, and, you know, they'll be wearing underpants or underwear by that stage.
Okay, so if you just quickly tell us then, like, you know, what kind of signs are you looking out for, and how do you deal with, say, like, would this work for someone? I don't know, do you work full time or what your situation is? But, like, do you have to be a stay at home mother to do this? Like, surely a creche probably wouldn't take a child if in this elimination communication technique.
Yeah, so basically, like, depending on your circumstances, you can do it in different ways. You can do it full time. And full-time doesn't mean, like, every single elimination, because that's not humanly possible. You're just doing it, like, you're on it all the time. You're doing it daily. But if you, say, are sending your child to a creche, or maybe a family member is minding your child, you can just do it part-time. Like, you don't need to worry. You don't need to do it all the time for it to work. You can just use the nappies as a tool. There's no stress about it. You just do it on your own terms and your own schedule. And that's what I liked about it. Like, when I was initially looking into it, I was like, oh, I felt, you know, the flexibility. You don't have to do it like a rigid way. If you are away or, you know, whatever, you can just use the nappy. So it's like you just work whatever way is your schedule. So it just fits into your routine. So you can do it full-time or you can do it part-time. And the same thing, it's like you're just learning that even if you're just doing it once or twice a day, the baby and you are learning that rhythm and you're picking up those cues. So, like, what you do is really you have to have a time, maybe like an hour, where they're nappy free, and you have them maybe with a cloth underneath or a waterproof paddle, a puddle pad, it's called, and to basically see like how often that they're going to the bathroom, and then you're kind of learning their cues, and then you start to just tune in, and you can just see from like they might fuss or they might cry, or they might kick out their legs depending on their age. So yeah, you just kind of like say when he was a newborn, he would kind of fuss and cry, and so it would be like if he's not hungry or he's tired, then he's signaling that he needed a potty. So it's kind of like just like a process of elimination to find out.
It's so interesting, like I had heard about it before, but not in Ireland. I didn't know anyone knew about it in Ireland, and then I came across this article, of course, by Tanya Sweeney, and Elimination Communication, the Facebook group. It has around just short shy of 300 members, 290. But Aisling, you, I know, have your own website, and if anyone wants to know more information about this, of course, they can get in touch with you, aislingfitzgibbon.com. And then, of course, the Elimination Communication Facebook group is there, and you can research that. Aisling, it's been a pleasure today, and I'm sure people across Kildare are absolutely shocked that your 7-month-old is potentially 70% potty trained, and I'm sure you'll have it handy now next year. I hear you're going on a road trip yourself and your fiancé.
Yeah, we're going to Europe now. So my fiancé is a musician, so he's going to be playing all over Europe. So we're going with him, the whole family.
Lovely.
And we have a lovely camper van. So yeah, this is going to be very this is going to be very helpful for all that as well. But yeah, that just kind of coincided with that. But yeah, so hopefully this time next year, he's going to just be wearing his underpants and he'll be telling me that he needs to go to the potty. And yeah.
But lovely.
It's not about a rush or like a certain timeline. You just go with the natural rhythm of your child and, you know, you make it work for yourself. And the more you do it, the more you kind of go, oh my gosh, wow, this actually works. You know, mm-hmm. I think initially I was like, it's a bit of a mad idea. But this is the reason why we're making a series of YouTube videos just to show people the process, because I think you can hear this concept and go, ah, that sounds crazy, I couldn't do that. But when you actually see it in action and we kind of we actually go through in the videos like what the cues look like and what it looks like in the day, a lot of people have contacted us and said, oh, you know, I'm interested in trying this now from seeing what you're doing. Because I think you need to see it in action to actually even believe it, that it actually could even work.
I'm sorry to cut you off now, Aisling, because we're tight on time here and I have to go to news. But Aisling, we'll have you on again maybe before you go on the road trip. And of course, if anyone wants to get in touch with Aisling about elimination communication, there is a Facebook group there, so you can put that into Facebook. And then there is also a website, aislingfitzgibbon.com. That is Aisling Fitzgibbon, elimination communication expert there. Her 7-month-old son is basically potty trained already. And now I'm going to go to my winner, who is down in Castle Dermot, Michelle Kearney. Hello, you're on the line, I believe.
Hi, how are you, Cuiva?
I'm very good, Michelle. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Michelle, what was the answer to my question?
Home Alone.
Yeah, that's the one. Well done, you're after winning the prize there. So you have won a meal for two in the Lemongrass in Carlow, Michelle. So if you want to pick that up here, or of course we will get in touch and we can post it down to you there in Castle Dermot. Any plans for the Christmas?
Just Santa's Claus is coming here, so.
Lovely. You've a few kids in the house, do you, Michelle?
Yeah, I've a 2 and a 4-year-old.
So. Oh, you're kept busy. What do you think of the elimination communication technique?
Well, my fellow's not well trained yet.
I think most people are like that. Don't worry, Michelle. We're all the same.
We'll get there eventually.
Yeah, exactly. That is Michelle Kearney there. She's after winning the prize of dinner for two in Lemongrass in Carlow.